Welcome to Buy Sci-Fi Bite-Sized Finance. I'm Kelly Brothers. I'll be your host, serving up some of the most succulent stories from our region about people, places, and things that impact our community and your financial well-being. I'm sure there will even be a few tasty surprises here and there when the recipe is right. Our goal is to have you learn, think, even laugh a little bit, all calorie-free. I know you'll enjoy what we're delivering right to your kitchen table or dining room or, sir, will you be eating in your car? Wherever you choose to listen. Time for another edition of Bite Size Finance. I'm Kelly Brothers, and again, you can find this podcast wherever you get your podcasts or on KFBK or KSTE Radio at 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoons. We have an unbelievable guest this week. Someone, maybe you know the name, maybe you'll recognize it, especially if you go to Kings games or other arenas up and down California, because not only is she good at what she does, but her marketing is different than any other trial attorney we've had on. Ann Fong is her name. Something wrong? Call Ann Fong. You know what I'm talking about. And Ann is our guest today. And Ann, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you identify as a Sacramentan. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, you can say that. Yeah.
So did you grow up in the area then?
I actually was born in San Jose, California, and I moved to Sacramento when I was about 10 years old. So that's why I say, yes, Sacramento has been my home for the last 30 so years.
Yeah.
But I was born in San Jose, so I definitely have a connection to the Bay Area too.
So you grow up here, you're a girl in high school. When was the dream of becoming an attorney? When did that take root in the life of Ann Fong?
Not seriously until later on, actually, in my 20s, when I was almost finished with my undergrad degree at Sac State in business. I was like, this is not fun. This is not what I want to do. It was something that I felt was safe, you know, going with a business major, right? And it would make my parents happy, but it definitely didn't appeal to me. And so I was on my last year, and I just decided to take a criminal justice course and kind of fell in love with it. And I was like, this is what excites me. This is where my passion is. So I switched my majors to criminal justice, finished Sac State, and started pursuing my route to law school.
And so you go to Lincoln Law School, I believe, correct?
Correct.
And pardon my ignorance, is that a full-time program or is that one that where you're working and you're kind of doing it at nights and weekends and stuff?
You are correct. It's a part-time program. It's called a CBA, California Bar Accredited Law School. Not a lot of people know about Lincoln or hear about schools like Lincoln because you hear in our area about schools like McGeorge or UC Davis, right? But Lincoln's very popular now too. And I don't know if you know this or know the background of my rejection and my journey to law school.
No, tell us.
Okay, so I would have loved to have gone to a school like McGeorge or UC Davis, but unfortunately I wasn't smart enough, or at least according to the LSAT scores, I was not smart enough. When I took the LSAT score, I pretty much failed it so bad that the score was equivalent to just writing my name.
Oh.
And so I was like, well, what can I do? You know, at that time, 12 years ago, 13 years ago, you needed to have a decent LSAT score to get into a law school, right? A good law school. And so I found Lincoln and I was like, well, maybe I don't need to go to a prestigious law school. And, you know, Lincoln is CBA. I'm going to stay in California. I don't need to go out of state. So it was an alternative route. And I applied there knowing that their standard was lower, right?
Yeah.
Well, even their standard, like my score was so low that even they would not accept me. So you have like your regular ABA school, your CBA school, and then I couldn't even get into the lowest school. So I remember the day I interviewed with the dean, he looked at my score. He was like, oh, I know we're not a good school, but even we won't take you, Ann. And he laughed at me and I wanted to cry. I did later on. And I was so sad because that was like my last chance, right? That was like the last chance I had to go. And he said something to me. He said, well, listen, if you really want to go to law school, if you really want to be a lawyer, you're going to come back, you're going to take the LSATs and improve your score by 25%. Now, 25% would have got me to their minimum, okay?
Yeah.
So when I tell you I scored low, it was bad. So I almost was going to say, forget it. But I knew what my heart wanted and I knew what I desired. And I was going to work my butt off to increase my score. And so I took it several months later and scored 27% higher to get to the barely made it past their minimum and started my journey in law school.
Wow. Yeah, but that's perseverance though. You know, that's, some people would have said, okay, I'm not cut out to be a lawyer, but you're like, no, I am. I just need to work a little harder or study a little harder. So you were taking the LSAT, what, as you graduated from Sac State, right?
Correct.
Okay. So you take that and you get into Lincoln Law. How many years did it take you to finish law school at Lincoln?
So because it's a part-time program, it took me 4 years. I did work the entire time and I was actually working in Fairfield, Vallejo at the Solano County Public Defender's Office. And so I would work 8 hours, commute, you know, back and forth and go to school. It was hard. I want to add this though, okay? Because when the dean at the time told me that, you know, oh, well, you're never going to make it to law school, I actually became the valedictorian of my class.
Woo! Yes.
Not only did I make it, I killed it.
Did you go back to him and say, see? Told you.
Yeah, it felt amazing because I knew that when I knew that if I wanted something, like you said, perseverance, I was going to try my best. And then when I got into law school, I said, you know what? I'm going to do my best. And my best was always just giving it 100% and nothing less. And day in, day out, that's what I did for 4 years. And that's how I became the top of my class. It wasn't ever a goal of mine. I mean, like, I was not a nerdy nerd, right? That wasn't really me. I mean, I did decent. I got like B's and C's, right? But not super nerdy. But I always knew that when I applied myself, no matter where it came to, that I could do what I set myself to do. And so that's exactly what happened in school. My mom always said, you know, if you're going to do something, go all in. And so when I got in, I was so grateful to get in. I was like, oh, I'm not just going to do okay and get by. I'm going to do great. And it was also, I was excited about law. It excited me. So it was easy for me to do good and be good at it.
That's great. So you graduate from Lincoln. Given your history with the LSAT, were you nervous as you studied to take the bar?
Okay. Given my history and Lincoln Law School's history of people passing the bar, it was, I think, like 30%, 30 to 35% ratio of people passing the first time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even though I was a valedictorian, it was still very nerve-wracking. And then you have the smartest people from all the other schools fail too, right? The first time. So I was nervous, but I also knew that I studied my butt off and I kind of knew I was going to pass. I knew the subjects and I took a lot of confidence in the work that I did and the work that I put in. And you know, you never want to jinx yourself, but when I walked out of there, I felt pretty good.
So you passed on the first try?
I passed on the first try.
I mean, to go from where you're not even close to qualifying for Lincoln Law School to passing the bar on your first try, that
Absolutely.
Is growth, if nothing else, right?
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's fantastic. So, okay, so you graduate. You pass the bar. What happens next? What's your next step?
Oh, that's pretty good story about perseverance as well. So at the time of the county, I wanted to be a public defender. And I had told the public defender at the time, hey, you know, I'm going to be done with law school. I'd like a job. This is 2011. And the economy wasn't doing so great. So I got the whole verbiage of, I'm sorry, we're not hiring any lawyers right now. So I honestly didn't know what I was going to do. I was like, well, now I have a bar. I mean, I have a license, law license. And so I got to look for a job. But there goes a public defender route. And I couldn't find a job, submitted resumes to a ton of law firms. And obviously, I think the first thing they may have seen was, you know, Lincoln Law School, right? That's not a prestigious school. And so I didn't even get any interviews. at all. And
wow, not even an interview. Yeah,
not even an interview, not even a callback, not even anyone interested. But I will tell you this, just, you know, one of the firms that I applied to is, you know, one of the competitors now. And so it's funny. But thankfully, nobody hired me, because what I ended up doing was interning for a buddy of mine, a friend who had a solo practice in personal injury. And I was just helping him out a little bit. And that's when the light went on, when I was like, huh, maybe I could do personal injury. This is actually, you know, this is advocating for people. I wanted to be a public defender because I wanted to be fighting for people's rights. And it felt the same. And then also, my friend, I was like, dude, if he could run a solo practice, I definitely could do it. And so I was like, it's not like I have any options, right? It's not like I had tons of people wanting to hire me. So why not? Why not just start your own law firm? Because like I said, if he could do it, and he had only been doing it for like a year or so. So if he could do it and be decently successful, then so can I. So that's how I started my law firm.
So how long after you passed the bar did you open up Fong Law?
1 year.
1 year. That's amazing. And you started it up. And today, just give me the numbers. How many offices? How many employees?
We have 3 offices and 60-something employees.
60-something employees, 3 offices for a law firm that was started because no one else would even answer the phone. That's astounding. Our guest today is Ann Fong. Something wrong? Call Ann Fong. You've seen the signs all around Golden One and a number of other arenas. We're going to talk to her about how she grew her practice, how she grew her business, and the role advertising played in that, because obviously it must have, because she's paying a lot of money to do the advertising she is doing. Our guest today on Bite Size Finance, Ann Fong.
Hello, this is Scott Thomas with CapTrust in our Sacramento office. I specialize in working with local nonprofits and associations. Annually, we survey private and public nonprofit organizations across the country to better understand challenges they see in today's environment. In our more recent survey, we heard concerns about proper board governance, mission-aligned investment, and how to implement alternative investments. If you would like a copy of the survey or to discuss your organization, look me up, Scott Thomas at CapTrust.com.
Hello, this is Marcel Plumpto with CapTrust in our Roseville office. I specialize in providing retirement plan advisory services to corporate fiduciaries. While we focus on many areas such as investment management and vendor oversight, it's our dedication to working closely with participants that drives my passion for the industry. Without a high level of engagement between advisors and participants, even well-designed retirement plans can fall short of their objectives. Should you have any questions on your retirement plan, please reach out. Marcel Plumpto at CapTrust.com.
Back again on Bite Size Finance. By the way, if you have a suggestion, a topic you want us to cover, someone we should interview, go to BuySciFi Podcast@gmail.com and drop me an email there. Kelly Brothers alongside. You can find this wherever you get your podcasts or every Sunday, 3 o'clock on KFBK or KSTE. Our guest, Ann Fong. Something wrong? Call Ann Fong. So we heard her early story. And as we left off, Ann had just opened up Fong Law within a year of getting her passing the bar. First time passing the bar, and because no one else would return her calls, offer her an interview, give her a job, she just thought, I'm going to open up my own firm. And here she is, 60 some odd employees later, multiple offices. How many years was that? 13 years later, approximately 12, 13.
Yeah, close to it.
So Ann, how'd you get going? How'd you bring in that first client to Fong Law?
Oh, it was a family member. And, you know, I don't want to say because it wasn't tragic, but it was a bad accident, but it came at the right time. And, you know, it was, our first clients were our family and friends, right? I didn't start advertising until about 4 or 5 years into opening the practice. So in the beginning few years, it was grassroots. It was just going to businesses, meeting people and connecting with people and shaking as many hands as I could. So one of the first clients was one of my husband's aunts, and she had got hit by a car, and we took the case. And that type of case, it settled quicker than normal. And it was able to fund us for quite some time. So, and then we started building the clientele.
Wow. So tell me about the decision early on, you know, 4 years into, what was it? Tell me about the thought process. Like, okay, we're set up here now. I know what I'm doing. We need to advertise. Let's at least dip our toe into advertising and see what happens. Tell me about that decision.
So prior to advertising, I had the clientele book base of about 150 to almost 200 clients. That was pretty decent for a solo practitioner. And I had thought, well, is this what you're going to do? Is this what you want for the future? We can maintain this and do very well and be very comfortable. And I had taken a trip to a cruise to Orlando or Miami in Florida. And when I got off the airplane on the bus, all the airports, the buses, and everywhere, there was this advertisement. It was like 411 pain or pain, and they had a jingle, and I was like, by the end of my trip, I couldn't get them out of my head, and I was singing it, and I'm like, well, we don't have anything like this in Sacramento, so maybe I should do something like that. So that's how it started. And then it was like, okay, if I'm going to advertise, well, you can't just do what everyone else is doing, right? And so that's how we kind of came up with the Something Wrong Call and Phone, and started the billboards, the TV advertisement, the buses, and everything else. So it was that trip to Florida.
No, it sure was. So you came back, and what was your first start? Was it buses, billboards, all the above?
We did it all together.
Okay.
It was like a splash campaign. Yeah. Because I seen it in Florida and it worked. I was like, who are these people? I'm not even from Florida. And I remembered them all my way home. I was like, it was so catchy, you know? And I was like, maybe I should do something like that.
So you start doing that. Obviously, I'm sure over the year, the budget has grown. I mean, our producer, Jeff, tells me that you literally have kind of revitalized billboards, or law firms using billboards, which has been good for the outdoor advertising world, because if something works, it is often copied. Am I correct?
Absolutely. You know what's funny? I'll let you in on something. Our marketing budget it's big, but it's not as big as you would think. When we first started the splash campaign, you know, we spent tons of money, but now, you know, it's been what, 6-7 years later since we started. We started advertising in 2016, and now, just like by referral or reputation, like we actually spend the lowest amount of money on our media, our TV buys, and our billboard buys, at least for the Sacramento Bay Area. And it that's surprising, right? Because we actually, because each year and each quarter, I look at the numbers and I look at who's advertising, who's on TV, and we don't spend as much as, we're like number 13.
Really?
On the TV. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So because we've kind of built that and that, you know, the branding and everything, that we don't. You'll see my commercials, you'll see the billboards, but they're not as drastic as they were before.
Are you including like the King stuff in that? I mean,
the King stuff is new. Well, it's like 3 years now, but the Kings for sure is different. It's a whole other game, right? That was the Kings and the Giants. That's fairly new for the past few years. So,
no, it is. But I mean, if you're in that arena and your ad pops on, you feel like you're being enveloped by Anne Fong. I mean, it is all around you. The colors jump out at you. You know exactly what's on, right? You know, something's not wrong, because there's Anne Fong. I mean, that's kind of the feel. So,
yeah.
So you're still doing billboards. Mm-hmm. You're still doing buses.
Yes.
You're doing arenas, you're doing Oracle Park, San Francisco Giants. How do you keep track of what form of advertising is generating which client? How do you do that?
We have an intake department that tracks and traces when the calls come in. Oh. And we ask them specifically, how did you hear about us? And what's interesting, I think you'll find, Kelly, is that, you know, as much as we do market brand advertise, a lot of our clients and customers come from a referral basis. And it's just how it is now after 12 years or so. We do good by our clients and they refer us cases just like any other business, right? So I think there's a lot of people who think, oh, well, you know, she spends a lot and she's doing all this advertising and she gets a ton of cases from it. We do. We definitely do get people that say, I saw your bus, I saw your TV, I saw your billboard. But more so, we get cases from referral base clients who have referred us to their family and friends.
So you could track that as well then, right? You know if you're getting referrals. Absolutely. And when did you kind of realize this is working? This is good. These are, you know, calls are coming in. We're generating the volume we want. And these are real cases with real settlements. When did you kind of figure that out?
Well, the first month, so I hired a marketing manager and she said, Ann, with what you got, I'm telling you, this is so different. It's going to kick off. Are you ready for this? And I was like, yeah, of course I am. And I think my staff at that time was like six people, like eight, it was minimal. And I'm like, yeah. And so after the first month, the phones were already ringing. Like, I was like, no, I'm not ready for this. And we actually, the next 2 or 3 months, the calls kept coming. We couldn't handle it. And I was like, okay, let's dial back a little bit on the TV and the radio. Like, this is too much. Like, I'm overflowed and I don't have enough employees to handle the business. So it was early on, the first few months, it worked right away.
And when you get calls, you know, what percentage of the calls that come in are actually, you know, kind of qualified people for you? In other words, people who have an issue where you actually can help them and you can make a few bucks on it.
It's about 25 to 30%.
Okay.
And what we tried to do now over the years, what we learned was, you know, if we can't help you, if we can't take your case, we are going to at least give you a number, a reference or referral to someone, another law firm or another department or whatever, because people just need help. And so even though we can't help them directly, we try and get them where they're going. So they didn't just waste the call. And I actually had a client who called me, who's now a client, who called me 2 years ago, and it was for something totally, I couldn't even help her. And Kelly, I'll tell you this fact. Up until 2 years ago, Anne Fong herself was picking up all her intake calls. Like I was doing my own intakes, talking to clients, and it was crazy. I don't even know how I did it. But so I would take these calls. I had my number forwarded to my cell phone, and one of those people called for help for something else. And I just helped her very nicely. I was like, hey, you know, I'm sorry I couldn't help you, but hopefully you don't need to call me. But if you do and something happens, you know, call me. And so sure enough, 2 years later, something happened, you know.
Something bad happened.
Something really bad happened. And so I am working on her case for her family right now. So
something went wrong and they called Ann Fong.
And she told me the story. She said, Ann, I said, how did you come to me? Why did you pick me out of all the lawyers? Whether they advertise or not, why did you pick me? And she said, I remember when I called you, you picked up the phone and you were just so nice that you were willing to help me, even though you couldn't help me. And she just always remembered that. And she said, I hope I don't ever need it. And she had given my number out to tons of friends and family over the years. Wow. And she said, and then sure enough, something happened. Man. And
I had a similar situation in where a young man called me. He had worked all summer and he had, I don't know, $15,000, and he wanted to invest and he wanted some ideas. And so I took the time to talk to him. He didn't fit what we do, but I certainly told him, here's where you go, Schwab, here's what I'd be thinking about, you know, and that sort of thing. And I helped him, right, for probably 15 minutes. And 2 days later, his grandfather called and brought in a $2 million account. And so I grew to feel like, all right, this kid was almost like a scout mission. Like, how does he treat people who are not going to be a profit center for him? How does he treat folks? And luckily that day I was in a good mood and I treated him well. That might not be every day. Hey, our guest today on Bite Size Finance, Ann Fong, back with more after this.
Hello, this is Will Gabry, and I am an advisor with CapTrust here in the Sacramento area. I'm a busy father of four, and life comes at us fast. As my 20th year of advising clients begin, I want to take a moment and reflect on why I'm thankful to have chosen this profession. Quite simply, I get to help people. I work with clients on wealth management, income, and taxes, to name a few. But even more importantly, I get to be part of great relationships. People often interact with an advisor during life events, and I've been with clients through difficulties and joyous times. Conversations, connections, and trust built mean more to me than anything else. Working at a nationwide firm like CapTrust gives me a team of professionals to assist in all aspects of financial advising. Being part of our local office means great care and service to our clients. If you would like to start a discussion and see how we can partner with you, you can find me at CapTrust.com. Look for Will Gabri, G-A-B-R-I. Thank you.
Kelly Brothers, host of this radio show, but also an advisor at CapTrust. If you're looking for independent fiduciary advice, give us a call. We have offices in Sacramento, Roseville, and Folsom. CapTrust.com is where you'll find us. Back again with Ann Fong, our guest on Bite Size Finance. Again, if you want to get a hold of me, Kelly Brothers, you can do so at buysci-fi podcast@gmail.com. If you got a topic, if you have a question, if you have a suggestion of someone we should talk to, buysci-fi podcast@gmail. Our guest today, Ann Fong, Fong Law. You've probably seen the billboards. You've seen her on the buses. You've seen her in the arena. And we talked a lot about your marketing, but how much do you think, I mean, you're a beautiful woman. Let me just say that up front. But beyond being a very attractive woman, you know, how much of your marketing is based on you're a person and you're telling them, call me, I will help you. This is not Trident Law or, you know, just some generic name law firm saying, call me. This is Ann Fong saying, if there's something wrong in your life, I might be able to help. Call me personally. How much does that personal plea enter into it, do you think?
You know, there was, when I first started doing those commercials, I mentioned that I used to pick up all the calls that came in. And so when I actually advertised and said, call me and speak with me personally, it was people speaking with me. And, you know, what I have to say about the part about me being, and thank you for giving me that great compliment. I think what it is that I would contribute to people identifying with me is, you know, the beauty is one thing, but I think that the public wasn't aware that there was this type of representation available. And when I say this type of representation, I mean a minority, a female woman, her own law firm. And like, I don't think a lot of people knew that that existed. Like, we knew, but we didn't, right? And so when I put myself out there on those billboards, it was actually a big risk on my part. I was afraid, I was nervous, because my thing was, what is the public going to think of Ann Fong? Do they think it's just, oh, I'm going to put a pretty face, or will they be like, oh, she's a female, she can't be tough, she's not going to be aggressive? And the typical image or type of lawyer that people would see are the older dominant male lawyers, right? And so that was a big part of why I did that, was to let people know, the public know, hey, there's something that's a little different out there. And if I can help you, I will, and give me a try. And that's exactly what we did. So it was scary at first, and I didn't know if it was going to get rejected. But luckily, the opposite happened, and it has been. I've had so many people call just to say, "Anne, I don't need your services, but thank you, for putting yourself out there. Because guess what, you've inspired me. And guess what, I don't need your services, but I mean, you doing that has showed the world that us females, we're a powerhouse to be reckoned with. And us Asians, we are, you know, I've got so many people just saying thank you for that. Like,
that's
because
we're
represented.
What does your family think about Ann Fong on every billboard? And, you know, what, I mean, you grew up here. I mean, it's fantastic, but is everyone completely on board with this?
Yeah, they are. No, my family's tired. My daughter jokes around and she's just so tired of everyone mentioning, you know, your mom. She's 8 years old. So she's like, mom. And like, so when we see my billboards, I'm like, there's your mom. She's like, oh, I don't care, mom. You know, so I'm so uncool to her.
So tell me about the decision to expand beyond Sacramento, to head for the Bay Area. I believe you're down in Southern California now as well, correct?
Correct.
So tell me about that decision.
Sure. The Bay Area, like I said, I was born and raised in San Jose for the first 10 years of my life. Always had a connection, always loved the Bay Area. And so 2020, in the first couple of months of COVID, it's like, wow, you know, we had the Bay Area in mind, but thought it would take a little bit longer. But I was like, this is kind of an opportunity maybe to get some cheap boards and cheap advertisement, right? Because people are staying home and no one's buying anything. All the businesses are probably scared. And so I did the opposite. I actually took the big risk and said, hey, let's open the Bay Area in the middle of COVID. And so that's how we started the Bay Area. And so we were able to get 300 billboards for the price of like 100. So,
and did the phone start to ring immediately?
Yes. Same thing with Sacramento, because I think the Bay Area, same kind of demographics where they're like, what's this? Who is this? Like, whoa. And so we had the same reaction.
And then LA was after the Bay Area, I assume?
LA's recent, as of November of last year.
Oh, okay. Is that working?
Definitely getting a lot of contact. Yes.
So out of your 60 employees, how many are attorneys?
Seven of us are attorneys.
Seven. And on average, and how, when someone calls and they have an issue and you can help them, and you know, how many, what percentage of your cases are settled as opposed to going to court?
Oh, a lot of cases don't go to court. I mean, we have, each attorney has about 80 cases. So it's about six to 700 cases, active court cases. So they're in court, and so that's probably about 20% of the cases that we have. And then out of the cases that are litigated that go to trial, that's an even smaller percentage, right? Because as you know, like most cases, they don't go to trial, they get settled. But we actively litigate cases.
Okay. And what do you say to people who might look down their noses at billboard attorneys or, you know, ambulance chasers? What do you say to those folks when you have built such a thriving business, and not only built a business, but I don't know you well, but I just get the feeling from you that you truly believe you are helping people who might not turn somewhere else for that same help?
Absolutely. I definitely know, like I sleep good at night because I know what I do. I know what my business is about, and people definitely call us ambulance chasers. It doesn't bother me, because I know I'm not one. So, but it used to before. And what I have to say to people who look down upon, you know, us and what we do, we helped so many people. Like Kelly, I mean, we've changed so many lives, and we've been helping people like buy homes, right? With settlements, people get the care they need. We have great settlements as well. We don't have an 8 or 9 figure settlement yet, but that's looming. But we've settled millions and millions of dollars. We have millions and millions of dollars of settlements. And so,
just give me a story. Give me a story of one person who called in and you were able to help and get them a big settlement where it changed. Give me one story. Obviously you don't have to use names or anything else, but sure, you got to have one or two that kind of lie close to your heart.
I do. And this client called me a month before trial. She was kind of out there, and she had gone through 4 attorneys, and I knew who they were. And I was like, normally when a client has gone through so many attorneys, it's, you know, could be a sign that maybe a difficult client or a bad case. And she pleaded to me, she cried. And I was like, oh man, like I believe her. And this was actually a case against a city, and her injuries weren't that great, but I believed her. And if I didn't help her, she would go to trial on her own. And they were offering her nothing. They offered her $5,000, and her case was worth well over that. Her case was worth at least $100,000. And it was crazy, the idea of, okay, I'm going to take a case and go to trial in 4 weeks. I don't even know anything about it, but I felt so bad for her. And I didn't want that injustice to happen to her, because she was going to get bullied into a $5,000 settlement. So I took the case and we tried it, and we kicked the city's butt. And yeah, and they tried to appeal it and they did not win. And they appealed it again. They did not win.
But what was that settlement?
Over $300,000.
Whoa. All right. Okay.
$5,000 to $300,000. Yes. And she was definitely not, like, she was definitely a difficult client, but we did justice for her, and it was amazing. So when people want to call me an ambulance chaser or say that I'm a billboard attorney, I can't be good, I mean, you don't know me. You can say whatever you want to say, but we do great work, and billboard attorney or not, I think, like you said earlier, you can kind of tell. I hope you can maybe see and hear the sincerity that I believe everything I do. And I don't know how many ambulance chasers give back the way that we do and like are there for the community. Like, you know, and so that's why when I say I sleep good at night, it doesn't bother me anymore. Not at all.
Good. No, it shouldn't. I mean, there's, and you do so much kind of out there. I'll call it old school marketing on buses, billboards in the arena. Do you do a lot of digital or web? Do you a bunch of that too, or no?
We do some of it. Yes. Okay. And I'm definitely getting myself into more of it and more. And you are the first podcast I've done, and I want to do more. I've been invited to do some, and I just always shied away from it, but look what you started, Kelly. You know,
that's right. That's right. And we had to have you on. It was because I'm sitting there in the arena going, who is Ann Fong? Really? Has anyone ever met Ann Fong? It wouldn't have shocked me if I heard, oh, Ann's, you know, lives in LA and she's an LA person. They're just advertising in Sacramento. But no, you're a Sacramento girl, really. So I wanted to hear your story. And that's why it is such a delight, really, to have Ann Fong on Buy Sci-Fi, the Bite Size Finance podcast. We have one section left with Ann, and we'll be back with you after this.
Do you have a financial plan for your pets? Protecting your loved ones, both two- and four-legged, is important, and the Sacramento SPCA can help. Join us for a complimentary estate planning seminar and learn how you can provide for your family and your pets while also creating a lifeline for animals in need. Visit sspca.org/estate to view seminar dates and secure your spot for one of our upcoming virtual sessions. That's sspca.org/estate.
Hey, this is John Lockwood. I'm a certified financial planner with Cap Trust. And 19 years ago, I made a decision to dedicate my career to helping people make smarter financial decisions. You see, growing up, my parents worked hard, made good money, but they did not understand the complexities of financial analysis, taxes, and estate planning that ultimately led to my parents' worst nightmare, becoming a financial burden on their children. And my calling is to help people flourish financially in any economic environment, to have the fortitude to endure the challenges that life throws at us. I invite you to call my team to discuss our fee-based financial advisory practice to help you live a confident and abundant life. Call us at 916-924-7527 or online at captrust.com.
Back again with Ann Fong. She's our guest on Bite Size Finance every Sunday, 3 o'clock AFBK KSTE, or wherever you get your podcast. Drops every Friday on the podcast. And again, if you want to get a hold of me, Kelly Brothers, buysci-fi podcast@gmail.com. So we resume with Ann, and you were practicing law well into your pregnancy with your daughter. Is that correct? Tell us about that.
So this was I have three children, and so I have a daughter and two sons. I have my youngest at 19 months. And when I was 8.5 months pregnant with him, which was about 1.5, 2 years ago, I proceeded with a trial up in Butte County. And so I step into court, and the judge and everybody in there, and I'm a big pregnant woman. I was 205 pounds. Like, so my belly is like huge. I'm not like a small petite little belly. And so kind of waddling in there, and everyone's like, good morning. And I'm like, yes. And are we going to have a baby here in the middle of trials? Like, I hope not. And so, cause it was my third kid, you never know. Like my first child came 2 weeks earlier, second one, same thing. So it was a little scary, but we made it through the trial, no baby. And then I gave birth the week after.
Man, but you got through trial. They didn't try to delay it out to,
No. And I didn't want it to get delayed. It was already long enough, but it was definitely different. And we had a good outcome. We beat their offer. So, but it was just a little, I could have sit it out on it, right? I mean, I'm 8.5 months pregnant. I could have just been like, eh, but I also really wanted to do right by my client. If we continued it, 3 months would be 6 months, 6 months would be a year. And it was just,
right.
With cases like this, when people are injured and they're hurt, you want to give them justice, and you want them to be able to move on with their lives. So for me, it was like, let's just hope and pray that my water doesn't break. And we got through it.
So, Anne, 5 years out, what does Phong Law look like?
Well, I just took my Nevada State Bar and I get the results May 1st. So potentially maybe dabble in Nevada, maybe in some other cities in California. I'm hoping that we definitely get a lot of more trials under our belt and get those 9-10 figure verdicts and continue just to do what we've been doing and being kind of like a household name brand that people recognize and continue giving back to the community.
And when you say giving back to the community, do you just mean by getting justice for your clients or do you go beyond that?
That and obviously beyond that, I mean, we do a lot of community give back at the Kings. So one of the things that we do for the Kings is, I don't know if you've seen the blocks for Bucks. So every time the Kings do a block on a home game, we donate $100. So this season alone to an organization, this season it was the Leukemia Lymphoma Society, and it was set over $17,000 that we donated. Last year was a different organization. I just signed a deal with MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, to be a proud partner with them. So when I say give back to the community through supporting our nonprofits, there's so many organizations that need help, and we are a huge advocate and try to help as many as we can.
So, Anne, what would you say to someone who is like back where you were when you got out of law school and you passed the bar and you've opened an office and you know you're good, you know you can do it, you know you can help people, and but you're at that stage where you have yet to advertise. You have yet to say, I'm going to put my name and my face out there and see what happens. What would you say to that person? Because there are a lot of good businesses who, for whatever reason, don't market, don't advertise, and they never, in my mind, reach their full potential.
Correct. Yeah, and that's it. If they don't know who you are, how are they going to find you? I mean, there's tons of attorneys and people and businesses, but like, how are they going to know if they don't see you, right? And referrals only go so far, right? And like I said, most of our business is from referrals. I would say to that person, do it. What are you waiting for? Just do it. And the worst that can happen.
Start off with, yeah, there's no COVID, but that's all right. Put your name on a bus and let's see what happens. You're right. People need to see the name. There's no doubt about it. And give me your forecast for the legal profession, you know, because there's been a lot of ups and downs in terms of like people applying to law schools. AI obviously is going to impact the legal profession, especially for paralegals and research positions. But at the same time, it's such an important part of our overall system of justice is utilizing trained attorneys to stand up for you under the law. So where does the legal profession go from here?
Yeah, it definitely is a little bit scary with all the technology and AI and everything. And I know that we were transitioning some of our stuff into AI and we're playing around with it because we do at the same time have to keep up with what's trending, with what's going on. But we also at the same time value our employees. Like we tried something and our paralegals were scared they were going to lose their job. I'm like, no, don't worry. You guys will have jobs. I mean, these robots can't do it all, right? But as far as like tort reform and like personal injury, there were initiatives going on trying to lower attorneys' fees, and there's a lot that's going on. It's uncertain, and there's a lot of changes and propositions. So I don't really know. Nothing's ever a guarantee, right? Just like in real estate and business and any other market. So personal injuries, it can go down. We can get our fees cut, and there can be so many other things that can happen. But that's why we always try to utilize and capitalize and do whatever we can do now. That's why I took the Nevada State Bar. Because I was like, hey, if there's another market we can enter, I'm going to do it now. I'm not going to wait for 5 years. And hey, if we could go into this market, let's do it now. Because who knows? Who knows what's going to happen?
Because no matter what happens, sadly, bad things will continue to happen to good people, right? And they're going to need some help.
Correct.
So tell me a little bit about, you got 3 kids. I know your husband works in the business as well. How do you think about the whole nebulous idea of balance in one's life when you have three young kids and a thriving career?
Oh my goodness. It's definitely hard. I'm not going to say it's easy or pretend like it's easy. I do have a lot of mom guilt, like a lot of working moms do, because, and my children are young, so 8, 4, and 20 months. So I want to be there for them in those young, tender years. And so that's why I do take the time and I don't work 80 hours a week. I come in the office, get it done, and I go home. I try to make as many soccer and karate practices that I can. I do have to miss a lot. The balance is definitely difficult. And my husband, he's not a lawyer. We met in law school. He is now learning to do a little bit more, to be a little bit more helpful around the house. But yeah, having a good supportive spouse definitely is gonna, it definitely helps. But yeah, it's hard. But you can, you know, you make it work. And I think I'm used to this kind of pace, this kind of go, go, go crazy pace, that it's my normal.
Yeah, so, but you're you know, again, going back to one of the original questions, though, this is based on you and your personal, your look, your presence, and now you're hiring other attorneys. Do you ever have clients who call Ann Fong, and then they are given to another attorney? Are they ever disappointed in that? No, I want to work with Ann.
Yes, they are. I mean, definitely clients. Well, I don't say the phrase, you'll speak with me personally anymore, for that reason, because I have a law firm, I have lawyers that work for me, but they have the same mentality and fight for justice. Otherwise, they wouldn't be working for me. So I'm confident in their work and their good representation of me. And so, yes, there's some clients that definitely want Ann Fong and have left because they couldn't get Ann Fong. And that's okay.
Yeah, that's right. You can't keep growing and handle every case that comes in the door.
Absolutely not.
That's for sure. And I can't thank you enough. This has been great. I love hearing your story. I love a local Sacramento girl who was told she couldn't get into Lincoln Law School, who persevered, studied, worked her tail off, valedictorian, starts her own business, advertises in a way that everyone else would have told her is stupid and foolish because that doesn't work anymore. And yet it worked. It works really, really well, if you're Ann Fong anyway. So thank you so much for taking the time to be on Bite Size Finance. We do appreciate it.
Thank you, Kelly. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Ann Fong, if something wrong in your life, you can call Ann Fong. She's at Fong Law. Offices Sacramento, San Francisco, Oakland, LA, Orange County, Stockton, Fresno, up and down the valley. A great story to hear. And she is just getting started. Again, appreciation to our producer, Jeff Holden, and all of you for listening to Bite Size Finance. We do appreciate you taking the time. If you want to reach me for any reason with a comment, a critique, a suggestion of someone to talk to, buysci-fi podcast@gmail.com. is where you'll find me. But if not, I'll see you on your favorite podcast platform or every Sunday, 3 o'clock on KFBK or KSTE. The story of a foster child who went on to not only graduate from Harvard Law School, but advocate for children, and what you can do to help foster kids on the next Bite Size Finance. Sunday, 3 o'clock on KFBK or KSTE. Thanks for listening to Buy Sci-Fi Bite Sized Finance. If you liked what we served up today, please give us your rating, subscribe, and by all means, share. Music for the show produced locally by Kitty O'Neill and her band, Skylar's Pool.
Under the Investment Advisors Act of 1940, this podcast is defined as an advertisement and includes an uncompensated testimonial by a CAP Trust client. Please be advised that clients' experiences as described in this podcast do not necessarily represent the experience of other clients. The discussions and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speaker and are subject to change without notice. This podcast is intended to be informational only. Nothing in this podcast constitutes a solicitation, investment advice, or recommendation to invest in any securities. CAP Trust Financial Advisors is an investment advisor registered under the Investment Advisors Act of 1940. CAP Trust does not render legal advice. Thanks again for listening to Bite Sized Finance.
Kelly Brothers here for CAP Trust. We are fiduciaries. That's an interesting word. What does that mean? That means that legally we are obligated to put your best interests over our own. non-fiduciaries don't have that same legal situation. They can sell you something as long as it's suitable, but they don't have to put you in the best thing for you over their best interest. In other words, they can't just sell you a nice annuity with a big fat commission for themselves, even if it's not the best thing for you. We are fiduciaries. We are proud to be fiduciaries. And let me say something too about price. I am always shocked by the fact that there are people who I know will scour the internet for the cheapest flight or the cheapest ticket to a ball game, but they have no idea what they are paying for their advisor. We tell you upfront in black and white, here's what you're paying for what you're getting. Cap Trust here in Sacramento, Roseville, and Folsom.